Welcome to LifeRx Podcast, a show about living consciously in all aspects of your life with authenticity and integrity. I'm Eva Patel. Welcome again to the show. Hope you had a great week. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, and he's going to share with us his new book, Dr. Chopra Says, Medical Facts and Myths Everyone Should Know. So, you know, there's a lot of myths and a lot of facts out there, and we all want to know the truth from trusted doctors who are real. Dr. Sanjeev Chopra is Professor of Medicine and Faculty Dean for Continuing Medical Education at Harvard Medical School. He's also the Senior Consultant in Hepatology at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Dr. Chopra has many publications and 4 books to his credit. Dr. Chopra is Editor-in-Chief of Hepatology Section of UpToDate, the most widely used electronic textbook in the world. And just to let you know, that's subscribed by over 300,000 physicians worldwide. He's bestowed numerous awards and received the highest accolade from the graduating class of Harvard Medical School, the Excellence of Teaching Award in 1991. Dr. Chopra also serves as the course director of several CME courses, including 7 annual current clinical issues of primary care. Each conference is attended by anywhere from 4,000 to 8,000 clinicians. His keynote, Leadership of the 21st Century, the 10 Tenets of Leadership, have been received with worldwide acclaim in the United States as well as several other countries abroad. So stay tuned after the break for author of Dr. Chopra Says, Medical Facts and Myths Everyone Should Know, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra.
Dr. Chopra.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Good, good. Thank you so much for being on the show. We greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, I'm delighted to be on your show, Eva.
Thank you so much. So, obviously, we're talking about Dr. Chopra Says, your new book. So, my first question to you would be, why did you write the book? What made you write it?
Yeah, you know, so each day there's actually we are barraged with a mountain of information, and I would say a lot of it is misinformation in the press, in journals, on newspapers, on magazines, and on TV, on health-related topics. And for the average person, it's very difficult to sift and figure out what's really true, what's fact, what's myth, what's reality. Is this really a study that's applicable to me? What kind of study it is? So we decided to put together a list of about 40 topics. And in the first chapter, we actually explain the different kinds of studies. What's an epidemiological study? What's a case-controlled study? What's a randomized double-blind controlled study? What is meta-analysis? So that when people read an article, they should really delve a little bit deeper and see what journal was it published in and what kind of a study was it. So that was the reason. There's so much confusion and there's so much myth about lots of things we do in our daily lives.
And so some of these studies, is that a way for people to understand, you know, what type of study is done? So like the credibility behind it.
Right, absolutely. So if they see that it's a randomized double-blind controlled study, it was done at a major university in our country, at a major medical school, and then it got published in the New England Journal of Medicine, or the Annals of Internal Medicine, then, you know, that's a good study. It went through a very rigorous peer review. There was appropriate statistical analysis. This wasn't by chance that this particular modality of treatment turned out to be effective. Not to say that some of those studies aren't retracted. Sometimes they are. And there was a landmark study published in The Lancet, which is one of the premier British medical journals, linking vaccination to autism. And it's now been retracted. And the lead author has actually gone into hiding. So that happens occasionally, but that's extremely rare.
Well, that was going to be my next question, that obviously, you know, the consumers that buy products, they look at the studies, and, you know, sometimes several years later, something will come out that, oh, you know, that you took there causes this. How,
right.
How would you, from your experience, advise people when they read or when they hear of this to apply it to their lives?
Yeah, so, you know, anytime there's a new drug that's being recommended by a physician, I think informed patients should say to them, why are you prescribing this drug? Is this better than what already exists? Are there alternative approaches to my taking this medicine? Could I do physiotherapy and lose weight, and then my arthritis would be much better, and I wouldn't have to take this medication? How well has it been studied? What are the side effects? What's the cost of this medication? We actually, in many of our medical conferences, do something that's called academic detailing, where one of my colleagues will present the three or four most important medications that are being used by primary care physicians in the last year or two that were approved by the FDA. And this colleague of mine will then discuss the class of drugs, the mechanism of action, the cost, how does it compare with existing drugs or existing therapeutic modalities. And then actually at the end of it, he gives it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And that's a wonderful educational way of informing our colleagues. Now, unfortunately, if for the lay people, there isn't much of that. And you could be flying from Boston to San Francisco to pick up the airline magazine, and there are all kinds of ads about growth hormone will make you live younger. You'll live longer, you'll become younger, it's good for diabetes, HIV, hepatitis C. And then there's a very small microscopic print in the bottom right or left, and it'll say, none of this has been evaluated by the FDA. So it's really tragic that in our country we can have claims about herbal products and all these kinds of products that are not made by pharmaceutical companies and have not gone through rigorous trials. And the only thing they're obligated to prove is that this isn't deadly, that this isn't very unsafe. And then they can make any kind of claims. And they do.
I must say that that is something that's a big pet peeve of mine, that
yeah.
Very misleading for consumers as to what's truth and what's not. So again, it's up
right.
To read good books and come from authority that we can really understand what's right and what's wrong. So what do you think is going to surprise people the most about your book, Dr. Chopra Says?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's going to surprise people a lot is actually the first chapter, which is on coffee. And, you know, all our lives we've been taught everything in moderation. Some 25 years ago, there was a scare about coffee being linked to pancreatic cancer, which is a deadly cancer. That was actually published in the New England Journal of Medicine, perhaps the most premier medical journal in the world. And then it was debunked in about 6 or 8 studies that followed that publication. And it turns out that coffee protects against liver disease, type 2 diabetes, gout, Parkinsonism, gallstones. And just 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a very interesting study in which it was shown that coffee, and here it was both decaf and regular coffee, afforded significant protection against prostate cancer and the deadly form of prostate cancer, metastatic prostate cancer. And that if someone drank 3 cups of coffee a day, it reduced their risk of this deadly form of prostate cancer by 30%. And if they drank 6 cups, it reduced the risk by 60%. Around the same time, there was a study, and not a dynamite study, but a pretty decent study, that suggested it also lowers the risk of breast cancer. So now we are saying that it lowers the risk of liver cancer, prostate cancer, and breast cancer, 3 very important and common cancers worldwide. And there are mechanistic explanations. When you see a dose-dependent effect, when you see it occurring in different cancers, when the protection against liver disease has been shown from studies around the world and in multiple studies, then it lends a lot of credibility to the studies. This is not a randomized, double-blind controlled study. That would mean taking 20,000 people who've never had coffee, randomizing through a computer half of them to drink coffee and the other to drink something that looks and tastes like coffee, but isn't coffee. And that kind of study is really not feasible. You have to follow people like that for 20 years. So very interesting, very, very interesting, and something we can all, you know, apply in our daily lives. The other thing I think that will surprise people is that you don't really need to take vitamins. The vitamin industry.
Yeah. Why take vitamins?
So, you know, we need vitamins if we're deficient in vitamins. You go for your annual checkup, and your primary care physician does a blood test, and lo and behold, you're anemic. And why are you anemic? And then they figure out, we figure out, is it iron deficiency? If it's iron deficiency, is it due to lack of absorption of iron, a condition, common condition called SPRU, or are you losing blood? In women, that could just simply be heavy menstrual periods. And then you have to either fix the cause and at the same time replenish the iron. So then it's appropriate to take iron. If you're anemic and it turns out to be due to folic acid deficiency or vitamin B12 deficiency, then, of course, you need those vitamins. Women during pregnancy need to take folic acid, and that prevents neural tube defects. And then if you're taking certain drugs, Dilantin for seizures, methotrexate for psoriasis, it interferes with folic acid metabolism, so we need to take supplemental folic acid. But otherwise, we don't need to take vitamins. And you see all these ads, men over 50, special vitamins, really not necessary. The only vitamin I recommend is called the sunshine vitamin. And in reality, it's a hormone, but we call it a vitamin, and it's vitamin D, D as in Denmark. And multiple studies have shown that it's good for the bones, it's good for muscle, immune system, all-cause cancer mortality. And I think that's the only vitamin we should take. And if people are reluctant to take it, they should at least get a blood level checked. And to their surprise and astonishment, many, many, many people will be found to be vitamin D deficient. You know, we make vitamin D when we're exposed to the sun. And it's turning out now that young kids playing soccer in Florida are vitamin D deficient. And at first glance, you say, how could that happen? They're out in the sun. Well, we're putting sunblock, told to do so by our dermatology colleagues, and that's good. We don't want to develop melanoma, skin cancer, which is deadly, but in the process, we're not absorbing vitamin D. So get a vitamin D level checked. If it's low, then you need a lot of vitamin D to replenish it. If it's normal, I would still encourage most people to take 1,000 to 2,000 units every day. You don't need a prescription. Multivitamins, which are not necessary, but if you want to take it and take one a day, it's not really harmful, contains only 400 or 300 international units of vitamin D.
So you need a lot extra. Now,
you need extra,
you need to take
yeah.
calcium with vitamin D for the bones?
No, that's for women. You know, for women or for even rarely in men who are at risk for osteoporosis, then you need to take both calcium and vitamin D.
Okay, so
but otherwise, for the rest of us, it's just vitamin D.
Very interesting. So definitely everybody needs to go out and get their vitamin D.
Right. The other thing that I would recommend, and at the end of the book I have a mnemonic in the last chapter, which we can also talk about briefly. But the other thing I recommend is that if someone is at risk for heart disease, and we tend to think, oh, I'm at risk if I have a strong family history or if I have hypertension or diabetes or high cholesterol. But in reality, any time a man is over 45 or a woman over 55, he or she is at risk for coronary artery disease, for heart attacks. And it's recommended that one take a baby aspirin a day. Rare exceptions to that is if you have a history of GI bleeding, from a ulcer, or if you're allergic to aspirin, some people get asthma, bronchospasm, and they take aspirin. But everyone beyond that age, or if they have risk factors, should be talking to their primary care physician, taking an aspirin a day. And if you're not taking it, my plea to you is carry it. And God forbid you get crushing chest pain and think you're having a heart attack, chew two baby aspirin. And call 911. That could save your life. Or somebody next to you on the golf course or, you know, in the airplane. So I carry aspirin with me. I take it myself every day. It's now been shown that aspirin not only prevents heart attacks and strokes to a substantial degree, but that if you take it for 10 years, there's a 75% reduction in colorectal cancer. It also protects against breast cancer and prostate cancer. So aspirin is a miracle drug.
And now, since the cancer seemed to be so high, that's some good words of wisdom.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So let's move over to other modalities. Like, does meditation really work?
Yeah, so, you know, meditation for thousands of years, people have had wonderful subjective experiences where they feel that they have more clarity of thinking, they're more compassionate, they're more kind, they're more creative. And now studies have been done. Dr. Richard Davidson in our country, he's been listed as one of the top 100 scientists in the world. And he actually participated in a Harvard Medical School continuing medical education course through my department and did a three-hour session with His Holiness the Dalai Lama on wisdom and then a three-hour session on compassion. And it's been shown now in monks, in Tibetan monks who practice long-term meditation, that they not only have that subjective experience of feeling compassionate and more loving and kind, but the appropriate areas in the brain light up on PET scanning. And on CAT scanning, those areas of the cortex of the brain are thicker. And that we're actually starting to see those effects even in short-term meditators. So the science is catching up. There's also a recent study that meditators have longer telomeres. These are little strands at the end of chromosomes. And telomere shortening is linked to aging and proclivity towards deadly diseases, including cancer. So very interesting data. I think the science is catching up. There clearly needs to be more rigorous and randomized studies. It would be interesting to study people who are about to learn meditation, measure the length of their telomeres, and then teach them meditation and then follow up and see, yeah, you're seeing an increase in size. Because theoretically, one could say the people with increased telomeres sought meditation. And you just happen to find that they had increased length of telomeres. So lots of studies being done now. There are centers of complementary and integrative medicine at Harvard Medical School, at Stanford. The NIH is funding research in meditation and things of that sort. You know, there's a wonderful saying by an old sage. He said centuries ago, you should meditate once a day, and if you don't have time, you should meditate twice a day.
That's wonderful. Because it's true, if you don't have time, you need to make more time.
Oh, yeah, it means you're really stressed.
My motto is always stop medicating and start meditating. So
yeah, true.
That's a very important part, and I'm so glad that...
As you know, I wake up every morning at 4:30 and I meditate for 45 minutes. And then if I'm fortunate and have time, I can do it for 10, 20 minutes in the afternoon or evening.
Yeah, and
it's
I think
amazing,
the
benefits
to clearing the head and starting the day in the right way. So I absolutely agree that it's a crucial step in our day that we shouldn't forget.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And then there was one other question I had for you. What are the benefits of breastfeeding? I mean, there's a lot of new mothers out there right now that I'm sure this question would be very prevalent to. So what are the benefits?
Yeah, so, you know, turns out colostrum, the breast milk that the mother produces for newborns, is very rich in antibodies, in IgA, and it's really good for the immune system. So kids that are breastfed have a lower risk of developing pneumonia, diarrheal illnesses. At age 3, they're ahead of their counterparts who didn't get breastfed in many motor skills. So breastfeeding has multiple benefits, also has some health benefits for the mother as well. And economically, at least in poor countries, they can save hundreds of dollars by not buying fortified milk or milk powder instead breastfeeding. So breastfeeding, every few months, there's another study about the benefits of breastfeeding.
And I think one of the biggest parts is the nurturing and the love that the bond.
Correct, correct. There are some mothers who will not be able to breastfeed, and I don't want them to feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
They'll still have lovely and beautiful children if they're nurturing and caring. But if it's possible to do, and most of the time it is possible to do, more and more enlightened companies have nurseries or daycare. People can bring their young children and then take a break and go breastfeed them and come back and start to work. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's more socially accepted now as well, which is
yeah.
So one final question I had for you was, should we laugh more?
Yeah, so you know, this is the mnemonic in the last chapter, and it's called ACED Life, ACEDLIFE. So A is the aspirin, C is coffee, E is exercise, D is D3, L is laughter, I is to go inward to meditate, F is fish or fish oil, and E is empathy. The Dalai Lama once said, be kind whenever possible. It is always possible. And then I tell my colleagues and friends, don't go nuts remembering this. Nuts are also very healthy. Pine nuts, peanuts, cashew nuts, walnuts, almonds, all of them. If you have a small amount of nuts every day, there's a study showing it increases lifespan by 2 years.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. So laughter, you know, shown in a number of studies now to be beneficial to affect the immune system. You know, Reader's Digest used to have a section called Laughter, the Best Medicine. There are now 6,000 laughing clubs in the world where people get together
really?
In a park and they just bellow and they laugh. They don't tell jokes. And now studies are being done to look at the effect on the immune system and to look at physiological parameters. It turns out music, I'm aware of a study done at Harvard where people who were intubated in the surgical ICU, half of them listened to rap music and the other listened to Beethoven or Mozart. And the latter group, there was a decrease in inflammatory cytokines or markers in the bloodstream that portend bad outcomes. And so now further research will be done. But I think there's healing with music, with laughter, with meditation, with all these wonderful things that you don't need a prescription for.
And that's we become so serious with what goes on in our life that we kind of do forget daily laughter. I mean, those that are fortunate to have young children or pets can, you know, kind of play around with them. But
those that don't,
you become very serious and you do forget to laugh. And I think, you know, it does let off endorphins or whatever to make you feel
better. Yeah, so, absolutely.
It's very important. So in coming to conclusion, what nuggets, golden nuggets can you leave with our listeners?
I think the golden nuggets is that mnemonic, ACED Life, don't go nuts. That's a good way to encapsulate. Don't take life too seriously. You know, celebrate every moment. The happiest people on this planet are those who have friends. Your friends are your chosen family. And the ability to forgive. Nelson Mandela, imprisoned for 27 years, asked on his release, do you harbor resentment or bitterness against your captors? And he gave the most beautiful answer. He said, I harbor no resentment or bitterness. He said, resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. What an amazing statement.
That's amazing.
So I think if you want to be happy and healthy, have lots of friends, laugh a lot, be willing to forgive, and then do some service for people. Albert Schweitzer, Nobel laureate, physician, theologian, once said, I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I'm certain of, the ones amongst you who will be truly happy are those who have sought and found how to serve. So I've distilled it into three F's, friends, forgiveness, for others. I mean, the show you're doing, Eva, is for others.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you've got lots of friends. And I'm sure, and I know, you're a happy person.
Honored that I have you as a very good friend. So thank you for being on the show. And yes, I do believe that those three F's are wonderful, and we really should be forgiving to ourselves and to others and have the friends and really just live life to live it, not just to exist.
Right.
So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom.
My pleasure. Great to be on your show. All the best.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chopra. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it, everyone. I hope you really enjoyed the show. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, again for coming onto the show and chatting with me. And don't forget, you can give us a call or send an email to liferxpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a message at 415-322-8777. I really appreciate all the wonderful feedback that I've got, and I wanted to share some of the emails that I've had. One of the things that most people have said, and I've heard it repeatedly, is that they've really enjoyed sharing it with their friends and family, and they felt that it's actually helped them bond with other friends and family on another level. So I just wanted to share that with you. I've also got some very good suggestions for future shows on perhaps the chakra system. So thank you for all your feedback. It's greatly appreciated. And for this particular show, this show is only going to be available on our website, www.liferxpodcast.com. So keep sharing and caring, and thanks again, and stay tuned for another show. We'll have even more for you next week. Namaste.